You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Without further ado, let me invite Dr. Bianca Lemus and Professor David Barkin to present their paper on rethinking social and solidarity economy in the light of community practice. Professor Barkin.
Thank you very much. Ninety years ago, John Maynard Keynes said that when the accumulation of wealth is no longer of high social importance, there will be a great change in the code of morals. The nature of one's duty to one's neighbor is changed. He said, we will cease to be interested in accumulating personal wealth and look for community wealth. Well, here, in the seat of banking secrets, international financial crimes, I think that we understand Keynes did not understand capitalism. We have prepared a series of slides that we hope are readable and will have very little to do with my oral remarks. We will pass those to give you an idea of what's in the text if any of you want to go to read the text later. Keynes's misunderstanding of the capitalist economy is very important. My colleague here, Anoop Dash, has in fact given you some of the epistemological and ideological, he didn't call it ideological, but the ideological basis for the reason why economists constitute a threat to humanity. The communities that are going to be involved or are involved in building a social and solidarity economy are going to go that route because they understand that their full insertion into the world market system is a mechanism for impoverishment. A social and solidarity society requires a new, different ethical organization of society. It requires that we understand that the needs of all people in the community must be attended to, and they must make provision, the people in the society, for the well-being of future generations. There are five principles involved in the construction of a social and solidarity society. I don't have time to go into them right now, but I will enumerate them, and we provide information in our bibliography where you can look for a further discussion of them. The first of these principles is autonomy, which is extraordinarily important because autonomy of a community involved in the social solidarity process means necessarily confronting national authority and the international market, therefore international capital. The second principle, which may seem repetitive, social solidarity, is something that is different, extraordinarily different, than what we understand as what is happening in a labor union, what is happening in the workplace. It is part of what should happen in those centers, but it's not enough. Because a social solidarity economy involves a responsibility for everyone in the community. The third principle, self-sufficiency, is fundamental because if a community cannot in some way or another guarantee that it can meet its basic needs, then it becomes exposed to the worst kinds of international blackmail. A fourth principle is productive diversification. Why? Because if a community remains limited to self-sufficiency, it will not have the ability to trade with other communities, enjoy the benefits that a real solidarity society should be able to deliver to people. But the final principle, the overarching principle of the sustainable regional resource management is fundamental because it defines, one, the problem of environmental responsibility, but two, the fact that communities cannot be in a social solidarity situation if they are not involved in building regional alliances. The question of defining what is a manageable region is a very difficult one. Most of the communities that we work with define regions in terms of watersheds, but that is not the only alternative. Developing a basis for collective and communal management is a complex process because it involves all aspects of social and biological life. It's also risky because it involves a direct challenge to the de facto powers, the powers that be, or for Latin Americans, lo que llaman las fuerzas vivas. It is much more than a simple undertaking for specific productive consumption or credit of financial activities. It involves a personal commitment from each member of the society to assume responsibility for the well-being of all of the others, not to assume primary responsibility for one's own welfare. Limiting individual claims for access to collective resources is an extraordinarily demanding element of building this new society. Limiting individual claims for the benefit of the collectivity is perhaps at the heart of building a social and solidarity economy. Therefore, it involves beginning with reversing the hierarchical structure of the traditional workplace. Traditional in a very short-term sense, 200 years, not traditional in the millenarian sense of many communities that insist on a different kind of way of organizing society. It involves a thoroughgoing break with national and international markets. It involves, perhaps most fundamentally, a break with, a change in the very meaning of progress and well-being. Coraggio this morning mentioned the concept of buen vivir, or well-being, living well, which is not the same as living off the fat of the land. The Andean concept of living well has begun to take a very, very important part of our understanding of what this means, changing the concept of progress. And since we're in Europe, in Geneva, I might say it also is very different than the discussion that is happening in Europe of degrowth. It is not the same. But I don't have time to go into that little bit of challenge to intellectual currents here in Europe. It is a rejection of the competitive struggle to accumulate wealth. It is, in fact, a challenge to the very concept of the nature of the accumulation process itself. Progress is redefined to track the satisfaction of a community's basic needs and its commitments to improving its physical, social, cultural, and environmental infrastructures. In such a way, it involves people in constructing a path to the social and solidarity society. It involves breaking the bonds of proletarian organization and private accumulation. It involves a whole series of different activities. If you get involved in doing this, people would say, but you're proposing a utopia that can't exist. And what we do in the last part of the paper is not only suggest that it can exist, but that there are people, millions of people, what I would say is tens of millions of people, who are already involved in doing so. And it's interesting, and we should be beholden to them to understand what they're trying to do and how they're doing it. A great many of the social solidarity societies that exist today are indigenous. And we should understand what it means to have a different cosmology and why it is necessary to question our very cosmologies in examining this. It is not simply, I believe, a question of economics. It is not a question of economic science, partly because economics was never a science and doesn't have a chance of becoming one. The indigenous cosmologies have a great deal to teach us about where to move ahead. But it's not limited to the indigenous people who do have a foot up on many of us, because the largest social organization in the world today is in fact a peasant organization, Via Campesina, an alliance of hundreds of local organizations that is present in over 100 countries. The experiences and the efforts and the struggles of Via Campesina are quite notable, and of course, their presence in Brazil in the form of MST, the landless movement, has a lot to teach us. But we also have the workers, the attempts of workers to take over factories throughout Latin America and in other parts of the world, but particularly in Latin America, which leads us to the need for a critical evaluation of cooperative examples. Cooperatives, which are simply consumer or credit organizations, are not building the kind of social and solidarity society that we are thinking of. These type of societies cannot forego consumer, productive, and credit organizations. But if we think that building a credit cooperative is sufficient to build a social solidarity economy, we're gravely mistaken. I want to reiterate, in moving ahead, the basis for building the social solidarity society must be a change in our social relationships, must be a basis in which the social relationship is not hierarchical and is not one of dependency, but of equality and mutual respect. A move towards the appropriate production and consumption structures involves a question for all of us participating in this: what is the nature of the consumption package? What is the nature of the institutions which we will build in the future that will keep us from becoming a consumer society? Will stop the progress of a consumer society and help us to create new priorities, new values. Thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unriz.org. Thank you for listening.